morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here, sitting in the studio. As ever, across from me is my beloved co-host.
As ever, it was a challenge this morning coming through the snow. It's starting to snow between Sedona and Cottonwood. A little bit of a challenge. It's kind of fun.
Starting to look a lot like Christmas.
And
we're hoping Gary won't be silent today. Gary LeMaster.
He better not be.
Good morning.
It's his show today.
Yeah.
We're going to do Paris. And not that Paris. We're going to do the Paris of the Climate Change Conference. Oh, that's the Paris we're doing.
The huge conference is just finished, and it was described by one of the more famous left-wing writers in Europe as the best conference, the best agreement ever by 195 different nations.
And we're going to try the Republican response. That's also part of the show this morning.
And that's the sort of shame, is that we're still far behind the curve of doing this. And one of the things I want to talk about a little bit is, why did this conference work? It's one of those things where the conference turned out a lot better than anyone expected. The results were much better. The last conference they had in Copenhagen, which maybe Gary can tell us about, was a huge diplomatic disaster. And what changed? Well, according to the New York Times, several things changed. First, the geopolitical situation changed, which means that the governments in the world were more sympathetic to understanding climate change. The climate change deniers, except for in the United States, and Mike's going to talk about those later, are way, way down the ladder in terms of having influence in the rest of the world. China's situation, of course, got worse. Apparently, French diplomacy was really, really good in a classic French way of softening everybody's elbows and getting everyone at the table and making sure that little countries got to have their say as well as large countries.
When it stalled out, Hollande, Prime Minister of France, came in, President or Prime Minister, I can't remember, came into the talks and kind of revved everybody up again and got them back on track.
And Obama gave a really good speech. Kerry had done a lot of legwork with China to get China and the United States to an agreement beforehand. Because without China and the United States getting into some kind of agreement, the rest of it wouldn't have fallen together. But it was a huge success, and you can imagine the situation in Paris, 195 nations. I guess it's one of the most successful things the United Nations has done in decades. And so what the message is, folks, is that diplomacy can work and can improve things. Right, Mike?
That's a great message, Steve, and it is that. Let's try to, once again, step back and put it in context. This is going to be, a man walked into a bar and he started talking about climate change and its results, shoreline cities, Shanghai, Bangladesh, 100 million in Bangladesh, New Orleans, we got all kinds of things. And of course, the bartender being totally convinced by the climate change deniers in the U.S. Started arguing that it's cyclical, that this is just a cycle of weather, and that nothing here is out of the ordinary. There is no danger. There's no reason for all these people to be meeting and making these decisions in Paris at the conference. This was during the conference. So I just want to say, you got 97% of scientists believe in man-caused climate change. And some of the folks, you got 195 leaders of countries meeting in a European city, deciding what to do, how to avoid some of the disasters, and we're going to talk about those. These human refugee problems on a grand scale that could be caused by climate change.
Yeah, I think one of the things that the article suggested was a reason was that, frankly, climate change, the effects are now more visible. And so climate change to most people in the world, most actors in the world, most of the
unless you're
most
a bartender of the in Cottonwood.
Unless you're a bartender in Cottonwood, climate change seems like something that I think the thing is, folks, that, you know, even if you're a nation, you like to procrastinate. Nobody wants to deal with climate change. It's complicated. It's difficult. It causes change. You have to rewire what you're doing.
Well, it's going to
and
cost
nobody
tax
wants
money.
To do it.
Cost money.
And if it looks like it's going to happen in 50 years,
yeah.
It's easy to put it off. And I think what's happened is we're beginning to see enough results, right, Mike and Gary, that it's gone from being perceived by nations as a distant problem to be seen by some nations particularly as something happening now.
Let me just read a couple of statistics of where we are. I'm the statistics guy, right?
That's it.
Of where we're at with climate change. 14 of the warmest years on record have occurred in the past 15. And 2015 will probably also be one of the warmest on record.
Just a cycle.
Global temperatures have risen 1.4 degrees Fahrenheit since 1880, the start of the Industrial Revolution. Atmospheric carbon dioxide is now at 401.58 parts per million. Prior to the 1940s, it had never been above 300 parts per million. For 650,000 years. Arctic sea ice has declined 13.3% per decade, reaching a historic low in 2012. And if you don't think that's an issue, I encourage you to watch a couple of documentaries by Vice News, which shows the Greenland ice sheet is losing height. The height of a house, about 17 feet per year, and is receding miles from the ocean. The melting of the Greenland ice sheet doubled between 1996 and 2005. It has receded more than 12 miles in the past decade. Just one of Greenland's glaciers contains enough water to raise global sea levels by 18 inches. And if the entire ice sheet covering 656,000 square miles was to melt, it could raise sea levels by as much as 20 feet, which would take out virtually every major city in the planet.
Just cyclical.
The Antarctic ice sheet is also melting at an alarming rate. Global sea levels have risen 3.24 millimeters per year, nearly 7 inches in the last 100 years. And I just like to say, if for what Mike is saying with the people that are deniers, To deny that climate change is happening and that humans have contributed to it is to accept the opinions of right-wing politicians over those of the world's leading universities, the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, the Environmental Protection Agency, the Department of Defense, the White House, and other government leaders, the UN, 195 world leaders of 195 countries, the world's religious leaders, including the Pope and the Dalai Lama, and virtually the entirety of the world's scientific community.
What do they know?
Yeah. Exactly.
What do they know compared to a bartender in Cottonwood?
Well, absolutely,
Fox News. This guy has just as much a right to opinion as the people who know what they're talking about.
But this isn't an opinion. This is science.
She does. Yes, right. Bartender. So we made this point on last week's show. And that was, even if the bartender is right, doesn't it make sense, to do for a man, for the world, to do what they can to reduce greenhouse gases, to slow this process down, to give those people in Bangladesh and Shanghai and New Orleans.
Mike's talking of places that are beginning to flood, and
right.
Maldives and
right.
out there. Right now, it's flooding little islands that are very far from the U.S.
The Marshall Islands,
where they're seeing most of the damage, folks. But it's time to listen to and notice the effects taking place a long distance away, because we're part of the same ecosystem.
It's also flooding a little. You know, nondescript island or peninsula called Miami Beach.
We don't count that. And since the series went off the air, it's just
save Gloria Estefan.
I'd like to point out that when Mike talks about the cost to taxpayers, that's not necessarily true, because this is a huge, you know, even if everybody's wrong, and we. You know, go to a lot of trouble to change and lower carbon emissions. What that really means is that we're going to clean up our planet. We're going to do away with a lot of pollution. We're going to replace fossil fuels with renewables. And that's a huge economic opportunity for every country on the planet, especially the U.S.
Ford is spending, let me get the figures right, $4.5 billion. In the next few years, to 1920, to develop electric cars and stuff. British Petroleum, the guys who caused the big mess in the Gulf of California, Gulf of Mexico, support a tax on emissions. Major corporations like Hewlett Packard and stuff. It's not just a bunch of scientists who know what they're talking about.
How about the Defense Department?
It's a lot of business people, too.
How about the Defense Department? The Navy is converting all of its facilities to renewables.
I know we can talk about this later, but I know that the right attacked Obama for mentioning the impact of climate change on the refugee problem. These are from military studies, and in fact, a lot of the military studies, the furthest thinking of American military, is that climate change is going to cause a tremendous amount of social unrest, migrations, food, famine, and instability in the world. So it's not something that the president made up on the moment. It's the information he's getting from the Defense Department to warn the American government to get prepared for the social and political consequences of this long term.
Well, that's it. And what you said is how 195 nations and how American leaders, except for the Republicans, come to the table, come to realization, come to solution, come to at least some methods, and come to an entire economy built around this. So it's not going to be this one-way street. As Gary said, there's an entire economy built, not just and built, built and building around the science and the solutions and the remedies for climate change.
There's been long-term discussions between the Chinese and the United States, and when the conference happened in Copenhagen, the president was new in office, and the Chinese leadership was uncommitted to climate change. It's not that they denied it was happening. It was going to hurt China because they're the guys who are doing the most pollution. Okay? I mean, it's that simple.
Well, you know, as I said before the show began, what the U.S. has done is not only export jobs to China, we've exported our pollution because we've exported all the manufacturing. They have fewer controls in place, so they're dumping huge amounts of pollutants into the air. We send over all of our old electronic equipment. They tear it apart, recycle it, and dump all these toxic heavy metals into the environment. In Mongolia, they're mining huge mines for rare earth minerals, which are used in all of our electronics, and that's causing a you know, a pollution nightmare. So what in effect we've done is not only export our jobs and our manufacturing, we've exported all of our pollution.
So since 2009, the United States has been working to discuss all the stuff with the Chinese. And with changes of leadership, they've got China to agree to more than they've ever been willing to agree to before in terms of
they can't breathe in Beijing anymore.
Right. It's gotten worse and worse there. And the United States has spent a lot of time and a lot of discussions, a lot of connecting up and having a relationship with Chinese officials. I mean, we're always talking about war and violence, but the world works best when people have relationships, when countries have relationships, they have understandings, when they can discuss things, when they can meet both formally and informally. And this has been a long process, and Secretary of State Kerry deserves a lot of the credit for the discussions with the Chinese. So they arrived at this conference, and the idea that was so brilliant compared to Copenhagen, which was a disaster a few years ago, was that every country, right, Gary, would provide a document explaining what they were going to do about climate change
right.
before they got there. In other words, they didn't show up with like nothing. Everybody had to come to the table with some kind of a plan. And that really, really helped to change things.
And overall, they set a goal of keeping the global warming to under 2 degrees centigrade, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you convert it into to Fahrenheit, it's a substantial difference in global temperatures.
Isn't enough, Gary? Though, I mean, this is the most complete, best agreement by far the world's ever seen about climate change. The most extensive. It's got 195 nations signing on to it. But is it, good as it is, enough to really stall out climate change and prevent things like the glaciers melting in Greenland? And all this seems distant to us, but it's really not, folks. The whole world is one system.
A lot of people don't think so. Bill Nye, the science guy, who's become a great spokesperson for climate change and trying to get people's attention to face reality, constantly talks about how things are escalating or cascading is the term, is that one thing leads to another. The melting of the ice sheets in the Arctic are releasing methane from the tundra.
There's a series on National Geographic right now that's getting a lot of attention. I'm sorry, I don't remember the group of scientists going down every year. I mean, the kind of changes that they're seeing in Antarctica are catastrophic. And that series is starting to at least wake up some climate deniers in America. I do want to we talked about the Pope and the Dalai Lama. So Paris and the 195 nations we've been talking about this morning.
I think the Pope's encyclical helped.
I really do too.
I think.
Well, that's it.
It's a major, very interesting document. I admit I haven't read it, but I did scan pieces of it.
And I just want to read a quote.
It's really surprisingly strong.
He said that climate change is a problem which can no longer be left to our future generations. He said that it would be sad, and I dare say so, even catastrophic, were particular interests to prevail over the common good. And by those particular interests, the United States, we're talking about the Republican Party.
Republican Party and certain businesses. So many businesses have understood what the problem is and are adjusting to it. And the renewable energy industry, I think, is something like $600 billion a year now. It's becoming a huge industry. It's still only producing about 10% of our power production. So it's still only 10%, but it's a huge and growing industry.
That's
painful if you're a coal miner because the jobs are shifting to people who build solar things, right, Gary, and wind power and things that you're not been trained to do. And so one of the questions coming out of the Paris Agreement is what happened to the countries who are most impacted like this, in like India, and to the people who are in the industries that are beginning to fade out as the world changes.
The that $600 billion, by the way, is probably equal to about one subsidy to one of the fossil fuel companies.
Not quite. Close, though.
Well, there's the
$600 billion.
Huge subsidies to oil. One of the great opportunities that I think when you look at this issue globally is that, you know, I've made several trips to China, and between two of the trips, it was 7 years, I watched China go from trying to build landlines for phones across the country, because they basically had no phones in, you know, except in the major cities, and you really couldn't call anybody except other people in the same city, other wealthy people in the same city.
Right.
I watched it go from that to the 7 years later in 2005. I was in China, and virtually everybody had a cell phone, and there are cell phone towers everywhere. And the great opportunity with developing countries like China, and it's only in the rural areas that China is still developing. But in China and India and Africa, the great opportunity is to just skip by all of the fossil fuel infrastructure that we have in this country and go directly to the next generation, as China did with phones. I think that's a huge opportunity. And I think if
in an oppressive country like China, where the government is still, I don't know, they call themselves communist. I don't know what kind of government it is, but it's basically a power elite running thing. But even in that country, they're affected by public opinion. And the Chinese people are getting really pissed off by all this pollution. Maybe they'll be more willing to do this, Gary.
Well, one of the things is the city most affected by it right now is Beijing. You've seen pictures of people wearing masks, you know, trying to keep from breathing in the pollution. But one of the benefits of a relatively dictatorial government is that once the government of China decides it wants to do something, it gets done.
Things happen fast.
There's no debate.
Faster, anyway.
There's no question. There's no debate. It just happens.
But we don't want that. But that's
one of the instances where it actually helps.
So everything is changing around the world, and all the leading political parties and
except the Republican Party.
Except. That was where I was going.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. I know it's good. It's a good. That's a good interruption, because I wanted to go for you. Why is it? I mean, I understand why the United States Chamber of Commerce is iffy about climate change and iffy about, well, they, not
it's
so
a
much
wholly
climate
owned
change,
subsidiary of the Republican Party.
Right. And okay. And they're iffy about the Paris Accords. They didn't oppose them. They just, well, I don't know about that. They grumble. Some big corporations jumped on board. But these guys just grumbled away. And the Republican Party is, I guess, the world hotbed of ignorant climate change deniers.
I'd like to point out that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is not only a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party, it is doing almost exclusively the bidding of multinational large corporations. People tend to think of the Chamber of Commerce as your local chamber, with small businesses that and the chamber speaks for them. When it comes to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which all of the local, you know, chapters send their money to, that money goes, and I used to be a member of the chamber, and my businesses were, that money goes to the U.S. Chamber, a good portion of it, and that goes into lobbying for multinational corporations that work against the interests of small business people. It's really clear if you start watching.
And that's why they're kind of grumbling, because they figure that their big oil producers and coal companies are going to be unhappy if they don't grumble. And they don't, at least so far. Now, they probably will come out against it or something. But right now, they seem sort of reluctant or afraid to come out against an accord that the whole world supports. But they're just grumbling about it. I don't know about this.
Beauties of this democratic institution that you're maligning here this morning is that the
U.S. Chamber of Commerce is a democratic institution.
Talking about chambers of commerce in general as a concept, not necessarily that specific one. But the idea is that the Verde River Valley Nature Organization belongs to the Sedona Chamber of Commerce.
So the Democrats of the Red Rocks.
And that's what I'm getting at. So even though these organizations pony up their money to this corporation shill called the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, there is some dissent in the ranks, certainly.
And I believe a lot of the money is kept locally. I mean, most of it's kept locally.
That's true,
it's like a tax.
But the lobbying all goes to benefit multinationals. I used to watch as I was an owner of an ad agency. I used to watch how my competitors were all benefited by all of the lobbying efforts of the U.S. Chamber, and they in turn, as a member of the chamber, did nothing for us.
Think about the decades that the chamber and so many corporations encouraged smoking. And think about the amount of money going into ad agencies from not having anti-smoking legislation.
Well, think of Exxon knowing about the effects of climate change, doing research on it in the 1980s.
Right.
And covering it up and actually working against that. Politically, ever since.
For a couple more decades of profit. Yeah. Their responsibility is to the shareholders. I mean, that's the whole corporate thing.
What's going on with the Republican Party, Mike? Why do we have this concentration of, I mean, you have 97% of the scientists saying one thing. You have the whole world realizing it's a problem, except for the Republican Party in the United States. I mean, there are other reactionary parties around the world who just don't want to hear about this. And I know it bothers their corporate interests, the people who own big chunks of the Republican Party, like the oil industry.
Well, that's it. If not that we need any more evidence Republican politicians are a direct line from the most conservative, most from the legal staffs of corporations in the United States. This is a perfect example of that. We're talking about almost a knee-jerk reaction. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky is certainly one of the highest leaders of the that. He said that. He's that Obama in Paris at this UN conference, climate conference, is making promises he can't keep and should remember that the agreement is subject to being shredded in 13 months. I assume they're referring to the end
of it. Yeah, they're referring to, like a lot of things, they'll shred the agreement with Iran, they'll do this and that. Whether they'll do that, understand if 195 nations sign on board. And the other thing to understand, folks, is that the agreement is still voluntary. In other words, every country has said what it's going to do, but there's no force. There's no, nobody's going to show up and make you do it. It's all going to be other countries insisting if you're not going to do it, we're not going to do it. It's going to be a kind of a dialogue of pressure. And so the Republican Party is saying that they're going to undo an accord that is the largest, most successful negotiated agreement on climate or almost anything else that the United Nations has done in decades.
And if they do, if a Republican is elected president and they do shred the agreement, and by the way, most of the Republican presidential candidates are, deniers of climate change, we will be a world pariah. again. The rest of the world will look at the United States as being the major entity that doesn't care about the well-being of the planet.
Will look like a word we can't use on the radio to the whole world. I mean, this is what the Republicans are heading us for.
Kerry said from Paris, he said, Paris, I have news for the Republican senators. He was speaking to one in particular from Oklahoma, but America has already reduced its emissions more than any other country in the world. He said, this has to happen, he said, of the agreement. Some senators were complaining about that the administration was going to come back and set emission standards for every sector of American economy. He's saying we already have, and when it comes to some climate issues, thanks to the administration, we are actually, in some cases, leading.
Isn't that why one reason we got this agreement is that we've shown that we will do it? Because if you preach restraint of all these emissions, all these chemicals going into the atmosphere, if you preach it and you don't do anything, you put you in a very different position when you say it's important and we should do something about it. And as a country under the Obama administration, we actually have been doing something about it. Keystone Pipeline with all the coal tars was stopped. EPA has put some regulations going to be painful for some utility companies. I don't know, you know, the thing is that we've never been really good at when the world begins to shift of taking care of, I don't care about the corporations, frankly, they can take care of themselves, but the people involved, because, you know, they're saying that now for this to work over the next, this whole, I guess, century, we're going to have to leave a lot of coal and oil and gas in the ground. Or take it out very, very slowly. And that's a painful process, Mike.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Especially if you're a coal miner or, you know, in the oil industry.
Well, don't forget, I believe that if we sent people into the ground to dig rock, you know, it would be seen as like an inhuman punishment. And yet, I recognize that there's thousands of families that have a tradition of this work, and it pays better than, you know, French fries at McDonald's.
Oil industry in Oklahoma, where I grew up, is probably the best paying industry. They're extracting stuff. They have all these. In the old days, it was oil depletion allowance. They have all these gimmicks and things that they claim that they need special treatment for and less taxes. And it makes for a very, very, very profitable industry. In fact, the industry, despite the legislation, is like it. I think Gary can tell us that the oil industry is at the height of its profitability right now, right? Even though with the drop, well, I guess it's beginning to change with the drop of oil change.
Right.
It's oil prices.
The market just collapsed on Friday because oil went down, I believe, $7 a barrel.
Wow. Yeah,
so it's starting to have a real impact. I'd like to chime in on you mentioned the tar sands oil. And I want to make it clear why that was such a big thing to environmentalists and to the whole climate change issue, is that if we had built the XL pipeline to the Gulf, it would have made it easy for the Canadian company to you know, clear cut and open pit mine thousands and thousands of acres of land in Canada, which would put a lot of methane into the air. Tar sands oil takes two barrels of oil to get one barrel of oil out. Actually, it's three barrels for one. So you end up, two barrels for three barrels. So you get you put two barrels of oil into the mining and the transport of it, and you get three barrels out. So it's really, really inefficient. It's also exceedingly dirty. It's the dirtiest of all the oils. When they refine it There are refineries in the upper Midwest that have pipelines to Canada, and when they refine it, they create a product called pet coke that is a byproduct, and it's a really fine powder that the refineries don't want to throw away because it still has some energy in it, and they want to try to figure out a way to use it. But they dump it in these massive piles that are uncovered, and any little breeze comes along, blows the stuff into the air. So people in the communities around these refineries find that they have, powder on their, like a black dust throughout their homes and, of course, in their lungs. So it's just a wonderful product. It's tar sands oil needs to stay in the ground, period.
So with the drop in prices, Gary, there's much more chance that not only did the president stop the Keystone Pipeline and making it more efficient for them to ship the oil through the United States and then sell it off to somebody else, but the economics of it, right, Gary, are making it less likely. And I know that it's hard because I have friends who went up to North Dakota, and the amount of money that you could get paid up there compared to Sedona, it was astronomical. I mean, you could triple your salary by going up to North Dakota, and now that's collapsing, right?
Yeah, but that's a matter of what the Republicans always talk about, free market. It's the cost of oil is dropping, so because there's a bigger supply than there is demand. So if you like free market, then you have to like that. And I want to point out that the deposits in North Dakota are quite different from those in Alberta.
They're not coal sands.
It's
right.
Not tar sands. It's shale oil. It's oil that's trapped in layers of shale. And it's sort of the same thing that they've been doing with fracking, where the oil is trapped in layers of rock, and so the fracking or hydraulic fracturing breaks the rock apart and releases the oil.
I still want Mike to explain Republicans
because
Gary and I are talking about all these facts and things, which the Pope was in sort of interesting and. What the Pope said was that facts are more important than opinions.
I mean,
this is coming from Pope Francis.
In 45 minutes, we could take the entire show to try to explain the Republican mind in the United States.
You can do it, Mike.
I can't, but I can tell you this, that the House Republicans have passed a bill to bar the using climate change, using trade deals, to cut greenhouse gases and other emissions. In other words, the bill approved 256 to 168 with 24 shameless Democrats joining in, people like our own Kyrsten Sinema, who, what a disappointment.
Biggest disappointment, I think, it's not that she's extraordinarily important, but biggest disappointment I've had for anybody I've ever supported for public office is Kyrsten Sinema.
It's the biggest change I've seen. But the Democrats, of course, are afraid that the message that it's sending is that we are not, the extreme weather. We are not supporting the kinds of things that they're talking about over there. The Republican Party of the United States may be the only political party anywhere in denial about climate change. The denial is why this provision is in this trade deal on climate is before us. So, when you're asking me to explain the behavior.
In five simple words.
I can't. I mean, I go back to Alan Wolf as my political professor from Boston College. When it comes to try to explain the Republican mind, it is as opposed to the liberal mind. It is not open to change. Tradition means more than anything. Loyalty over reason is a
They're good values. Conservatives have good values. It's just I think they're getting, I mean, loyalty is great in its place.
Well, I'm not sure loyalty over reason. I loyalty is great. If we're talking about your wife or you know, the military unit, but not when it comes to overriding reason every time.
So what do you need with reason? What do you need with all that?
It's faith.
Kind of
it's faith over reason. It's not just loyalty. It's faith. It's really been captured by the religious right, but also
political. I mean, economic. In other words, George Bush was the president from the oil industry,
right?
And when he was elected, the oil industry got everything he could give them that couldn't be stopped.
Well, you could divide the current list of Republican candidates for president into three categories. You have the libertarians like Rand Paul. You have the corporatists like Jeb Bush and Chris Christie and others. And then you have the evangelical, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, people like that. I can read you a few quotes of what those candidates think about global warming. Getting back to that,
good if you can bear to do it. Go ahead.
Jeb Bush, I don't think the science is clear on what percentage is man-made and what percentage is natural. It's convoluted, and for people to say the science is decided on this is just really arrogant. He does acknowledge that climate change exists, unlike a lot of the others. Ben Carson says the temperature, he's a denier, and he says the temperature is either going up or going down at any point in time, so it's really not a big deal. Chris Christie is one of the sane, on this issue, one of the sane Republican candidates, says, I think global warming is real. I don't think that's deniable, and I do think human activity contributes to it. One of my favorites is Ted Cruz, who, when he was being interviewed by Glenn Beck,
just jumped in the poll.
He's a real threat in many ways. Says climate change is not science, it's religion. Look at the language where they call you a denier. Denier is not the language of science. Denier is the language of religion. It's heretic if you believe in it. You are a blasphemer. If you don't believe in it, you're a blasphemer.
It's very clever turning everything upside down, isn't it?
Well,
that's his main
there
skill.
Are people like Huckabee and who's also, he's still in the race, I believe, that says, calls.
Yeah, I don't think he made the latest cut for debate,
I'm
but
sorry.
He's still there. Yeah, you're
Huckabee
right.
Huckabee called Obama a weather-obsessed leader. I mean, as opposed to a commander. He was using that as a comparison.
We don't want to beat up on Republicans, but this
denial
is a serious problem. Mike wants to beat up
this side of the table, though. I don't want to beat up on anybody. I just want them to buy me a cup of coffee. We do want to talk about reasonable approaches to saving the world. I mean, I go to movies and I see these guys saving the world all the time. This is a real life.
But they save the world by shooting somebody.
Well, okay, but this is a real time, real deal, save the world kind of thing.
Speaking of shooting someone, I'd just like to acknowledge that
whoa.
That
confession,
that,
Gary, on the radio.
Put your finger on the button.
I'd just like to acknowledge that today is the anniversary of Sandy Hook, the elementary school shooting, which doesn't go down as terrorism, but it's not called terrorism, but it's simply another form.
Yeah. Well, if we're going to change directions that fast, we can do that. I like Michael Moore's quote that. And this is that sooner or later, somebody's going to release the photos of Sandy Hook. And then we will get sensible gun laws.
A whole cult of.
And what I mean by sensible gun
denying
laws.
Denying that Sandy Hook ever took place.
Oh, there's that. See, by sensible gun laws, we're simply talking about background checks. We're not talking about taking away your Glock.
If you don't agree with something, you just deny it, and you say it's a conspiracy theory.
And call it a religion. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay, we want to thank the Democrats of the Red Rocks for the, whatever they do for us, which is much. We want to thank Ledbetter Law.
Bill Timmerman and Dick Searle.
Bill Timmerman, Dick Searle.
Contribute.
This is the season to forgiving and recognizing those people that have given to us that allow us to for 4 years now, over 4 years, to try to put a little truth, a little perspective, a little Democratic perspective on the airwaves and on the internet at vvid.org. You can catch this show and our last show on climate, and our show before that on the Arizona Advocacy Network on vvid.org. Check out our podcasts, vvid.org.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.